Welcome, everybody, to the War and Peace Baseball Podcast. It is episode 92 for Tuesday, October 24th. I'm Alex Uy, and I'm here today with Ray Estrada and Alex Rudy. What's up, guys?
How's it going?
Not much right now.
So, this is hard for me, personally, and, you know, I will be a trooper, and I will get through this, but my team is gone. They've plunged a dagger through my heart, and, you know, congratulations to the Houston Astros, but also screw the Houston Astros for advancing to the World Series. So, you know, if you've been paying attention to anything, you know it's Houston, it's LA, it's the big matchup, and we'll talk all about that. You know, First of all, I'm pretty sure I know how you guys feel about this World Series, but, you know, how are you guys dealing with this matchup? Are you guys happy with the outcomes? You guys wish things went differently?
I mean, I think, I'm sure Ray has a lot more to say about this than me as a Dodger fan, but I mean, first off, as a Yankee fan, I'm sure we'll get into it more later. I mean, it's disappointing in the end to be so close and not make it, but honestly, this season was far more than I think any reasonable person could have ever expected to be in. In the end, I really can't complain too much with the result. I think, moreover, I think this is a year where, for once, you can say that the two best teams in baseball likely made it to the World Series. I think, you know, the Nationals and the Indians both had a case during the season to also, you know, have that label, but I think in the end, you could find few people who would say that neither of these teams, or at least not two of the best, three to four, if not for sure the two best, and it should be a great series. I think the teams match up decently well, and yeah, that's should be some good baseball. I think it's good for the sport, honestly, that this playoffs was so entertaining also as well.
Yeah, you have high hopes for the next week and a half or so, Ray. You got a lot to look forward to here.
Yeah, as a Dodgers fan, I feel very confident in this team right now. I mean, they look like that the team that made that 43-7 run earlier in the year, a team that doesn't necessarily look at it, because in the NLCS, the Dodgers, the only game the Dodgers scored first in was the clincher, Game 5. Mm-hmm. And so, like, but during the other games, the ones that they won, even the one they lost, like, they could come back and beat this team. I mean, granted, that was part of the Cubs having a lackluster bullpen, but, like, this team has that kind of swagger back that we saw in summer. And not the one that lost 16 out of 17. This team is looking very good, and I'm confident against any opponent, whether it was the Yankees or the Astros.
Yeah, it should be good. These are two teams with a ton of momentum going full steam ahead right now. And, you know, obviously both these teams took a little bit different paths to get here. So we'll discuss the league championship series matchups that are done and over. We'll talk about those in a little bit if you're more interested in hearing about that. But we should talk about, you know, the teams that earned it. 200 win teams that are squaring off in this World Series. Let's start with Game 1. That's where it's going to start. Tuesday evening at a freaking 100-plus degree Dodger Stadium. That should be interesting. It's going to be Dallas Keuchel. It's going to be Clayton Kershaw. Battle of the K's. Who looks better? Obviously, Kershaw's the best pitcher on the planet, but Dallas Keuchel has a little bit of momentum as well right now. All the Astros pitching has done a really great job this postseason so far. Definitely overperformed. So, you know, especially in this Game 1 matchup, which pitcher looks like they're in the best shape, you know, for this matchup? Obviously, Kershaw more rest. Keuchel has, you know, a little bit, you know, different type of stuff than Kershaw is going to bring. Ray, why don't you talk about Kershaw a little bit?
Kershaw, to me, has looked fine this postseason. I know that you, Uy, have tried to troll me when he's given up home runs. And yes, he has given up a good number of home runs. But the last start against the Cubs, Game 5, a closeout game, he goes in and is very efficient through six innings, through 89 pitches, struck out 5, walked 1, and only gave up a home run to Chris Bryant on not a bad pitch. And a lot of the home runs that he's given up have, except for a couple, have been on, like, good pitches, and the guy just hit him out. But, like, Kershaw has looked solid enough this postseason. I think people need to realize, like, outsiders need to realize, I think Dodgers fans are starting to realize that he's a solid six-inning solid six-inning pitcher for the Dodgers. Get Bridget to the bullpen, Bridget to Morrow, Jansen, and whoever. He's solid. Keuchel looked a little bit shaky in the last, but he was very good in Houston game one. So I think it'll be interesting. But Clayton Kershaw has looked very solid, and he pitched like an ace in game five. And I know the storyline wasn't quite that because he still gave up a home run and only went six, but he looked like an ace. He pitched like an ace, and I feel very confident with Kershaw.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit of, you know, your roster construction, platoon splits here. Two lefties going. Rudy, which team seems better equipped to hit left-handed pitching throughout the series?
Ooh, that's very, it's a great question. I mean, I feel like I'm going to be honest, I should have been more prepared to know the exact splits that these teams have.
Yeah, what's going on?
But just from the past series, I mean, I think the Astros offense against the Yankees lefty pitching was like nothing spectacular, at least in my opinion. They didn't, Severino and Sabathia weren't lights out, but they certainly helped more than held their own. And, you know, it's not like the lefty pitchers on the Dodgers are definitely superior, at least on paper, to Sabathia. The Sabathia did pitch pretty well this playoffs, and comparable, if not better, to peak form Severino. So to me, it has to be the Dodgers, especially coming off that hot, NLCS, where it seemed like their offense was, you know, the best one left in baseball.
Yeah, I think it gets down to the deeper parts of the order with both of these teams. I do think that the Astros have a little bit more,
lineup
depth, for sure.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
Because they can start Evan Gattis behind the plate, and they have guys like Gurriel and, you know, Marwin Gonzalez, a switch hitter. Granted, a much better left-handed hitter, so that's something to keep in mind as well. But the Dodgers, you know, as they go down the line, they do seem to have a lot of, you know, good right-handed bats just waiting in the wings, like Austin Barnes, Logan Forsythe. These guys might benefit just from, you know, seeing looks from the left side of the plate. I don't know the exact splits. I think Austin Barnes is even better against right-handed pitching.
Yeah, he
is.
So
it's, I mean, I'm not even going to look at platoon splits with the top of the order guys. Your George Springer, Altuve, Correa, Justin Turner types. These are, you know, negligible. What side of the plate or what side of the mound these pitchers throwing from doesn't matter. So, you know, the next game in this series is going to feature the championship series MVP Justin Verlander, and he's going up against Rich Hill. Two very different pitchers going in this game.
Pure power versus pure finesse.
Exactly. And this is the time of year that I bring it up constantly, is that stuff plays. And Rich Hill, you know, his stuff isn't electric. He has a great curveball, but he grooves his fastball at 90 miles an hour. If mistakes are made, they're going to be capitalized on. Absolutely. So, Ray, are you concerned at all with, you know, the type of repertoire Rich Hill has against a team like the Astros?
No, because, I mean, he was supposed to struggle against the Diamondbacks, who have touched him up a little bit. He did give up a two-run homer to Goldschmidt the first inning, but didn't give up anything past that, and he was very good against the Cubs, only giving up one run in his five innings there on a home run. And it's so, I mean, you say stuff plays, but, I mean, Hill has his curveball, you can argue, is, like, very good stuff, and he spots his fastball well. I could see this game, like, Hill could lose it 1-2 just because of how good Verlander is, but I'm not too concerned for Hill because he's faced good lineups this postseason and has shut them down pretty effectively.
Yeah, it is a little bit baffling how Rich Hill is so effective with just that one pitch.
And, he's such a competitor. I mean, you see it. He's such a competitor. He gave up that two-run home run to Goldschmidt, in the game two of the NLDS, and you're like, oh, okay, here come the Diamondbacks, gonna kind of beat up on Rich Hill, and he just shut them down. He looked good. He started spotting that fastball, because when he throws that fastball up in the zone at 90 miles an hour after a 76 mile an hour curveball, it looks faster than 90 miles an hour to those guys.
Right, right. So, you know, you can't say enough about what Verlander's been able to do, but, you know, there's concern somewhere down the line. Like, people are going to adjust to him. Like, obviously, when you're as hot as he is, it doesn't even matter what you throw. Everything feels, you know, 100%. Every single pitch is working for him, it seems. The Dodgers have any hope of, you know, stopping that kind of momentum? Like, we talked about, you know, how these two teams have a ton of momentum. The Dodgers' offense has looked really good lately. I'm interested in seeing, you know, what happens when Verlander goes up against Justin Turner, which one of these guys is going to prevail. Like, that could be a very big deciding force, just, you know, single at-bats that can break a pitcher down, or, you know, just shut down a hitter's momentum. Either way you go with that. I think you guys have anything else to say about what Verlander's done? Or
I think it'll be curious to see with all these Astros pitchers. Like, the Yankees struck out a lot. Aaron Judge set the single postseason record for strikeouts. And so there's a lot of strikeouts on the Yankees. The Dodgers can see a lot of pitches if they want to. They don't strike out a lot. They can be very disciplined. They can be aggressive when they have to, when they know guys are throwing first pitch strikes. But if guys are going to nibble and try to get to chase, they can be very patient. It'll be interesting to see if they can keep that discipline, or if Verlander can exploit over-aggressiveness and just kind of if Verlander can break down that discipline.
Mm-hmm. I just feel like in general, just kind of more of a general like overview statement going, I think regardless of what happens this series, I think Verlander's Astros performance and another extent Sabathia's performance on the Yankees kind of solidified both those guys to be Hall of Famers, in my opinion. I think both of them were kind of missing one more dominant playoff. Not that Sabathia was truly dominant, but like one good memorable playoff series to kind of solidify those arguments. I think they both made those cases personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting that you brought up, you know, the patience factor with the Dodgers specifically. They did seem to have the highest, you know, like walk rate or walks per game, I guess. And then the Yankees profile very similarly. They're the second place team on that list. So, I mean, the Astros do kind of have a similar, you know, team that they're going up against. They do not, you know, there's going to be strikeouts, but there's also going to be a lot of pitches being thrown.
Yeah, and one crazy stat from the NLDS, the Dodgers saw, I don't remember the final totals, but the Dodgers saw nearly twice as many pitches as the D-backs did the entire series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, you know, that doesn't sound like that baffling, you know, when you just hear it out loud, but when you actually think about what that means, that's pretty spectacular.
And that was not batting in the ninth for two games.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't even think about that. That's pretty much the only guaranteed starters that are listed. Darvish is going to start game three for the Dodgers, but the Astros haven't announced anything yet. I imagine it would be, you know, some combination of Morton, McCullers, and maybe like Brad Peacock. Am I forgetting somebody there? I think those are their main starters. So I think as a whole, you know, we've talked about, you know, these pitchers specifically and what they can bring to the table. But I think it's worth mentioning the Astros' team approach this postseason so far. And it has been, I am not going to let hitters beat me in the zone. They have been throwing a lot of breaking balls and a lot of pitches outside the zone and somehow making it work. They're feasting off the aggressiveness of hitters. And, you know, even like I mentioned, the Yankees strike out a lot, but they see a lot of pitches. It clearly was an effective tactic against them. You know, people, if you'll remember Lance McCullers in you know, that amazing game seven through, what was it, 26 consecutive curveballs to end the game, I think. And that's kind of been the theme the entire series, is don't let, you know, the hitters get the pitch that they want to see. Rudy, how do you feel about that backwards pitching?
I think it's interesting because I wonder, can you really like repeat that strategy when a team has the time to prepare that the Dodgers have? And when, I mean, I don't know the exact Dodgers strikeout statistics, mm-hmm. but I'm guessing they're not nearly as high as the Yankees. And if you're not facing such an all or nothing lineup, I know like some guys like Bellinger are a little bit more strikeout heavy, but at least to me on paper, it feels like there's some more kind of pure contact hitters on the Dodgers. And, you know, when you're taking a huge risk when you kind of pitch that way, because if you are off that night, I mean, you're going to be, first of all, obviously very inaccurate, and second of all, hanging a ton of pitches. And for a while, that was essentially keeping the Yankees in the series, honestly, because they were capitalizing on those mistakes. Judge, for all his strikeouts, did a great job when he was left a hanging break ball to drive it out of the park. So Gardner, so did Gregorius, so did Bird, a lot. That's what was, like, it works both ways, a double-edged sword. And personally, I don't really think the Astros have enough talented pitchers to pull that off for an entire series successfully, just exclusively rely on that. I mean, obviously they're not going to perform in the same way McCullers did, just like spam it to death, because, you know, almost no pitcher in the game can do that every night, if any, ever. But it doesn't feel like a sustainable strategy, in all honesty.
Well, I'm going to argue that the Astros are the best equipped team in the league to go with this approach. And, you know, I would say one of the, you know, the close seconds would be the Dodgers, but the Astros do a lot of work maximizing spin rate, and it shows with the, you know, the types of pitchers that they have been running out there. And I'm not even talking about the top of the order, you know, or top of the rotation, Keuchel, and, you know, obviously Verlander has a very good curveball. I'm sure being in Houston has helped, but the work they've done with Charlie Morton to, you know, maximize his spin rate, his curveball moves, you know, you talk about Rich Hill having one of the best curveballs in the game. Morton's moves just about as much. And McCullers obviously has one of the sharpest breaking balls in all of baseball. That's the one, it worked enough to throw it, you know, 20-some consecutive times in a row. And, you know, this is where tons and tons of preparation and data really comes into play. This is the biggest stage. This is where all of it gets put to use. You can be absolutely certain that every single hitter on either team will have a very specialized, you know, game plan to go up against, from both sides, you know, from the hitter's perspective and the pitcher's perspective. So, you know, I think the better prepared team will benefit here. I think it'll show, because
I mean,
you know, it'll be obvious who's overmatched and who's not.
I was just thinking more in terms of their bullpen, I guess, because I think, yeah, 100% their rotation is very skilled in terms of the off-speed. But, like, watching every game of that Yankee series, the thing I noticed just over and over again was that, like, that bullpen never feared me. And that while they did hold the lead three of those games, you know, I guess technically four, but, like, you know, they shut them down the first two. I mean, it was really the Astros starters going deep that, you know, kept them in that series and ultimately won it for them. I don't think modern baseball is one where in the playoffs you can just rely on your starters to really go deep in the series and win it for you, in my opinion. I just don't think that's how the game is played anymore. I think that's the Astros' biggest weakness.
I found some stats, some comparisons talking about how disciplined the Dodgers are and how disciplined in terms of walk rate the Yankees were. So the Yankees walked one more time, 45 times, to the Dodgers, 44 times this postseason. The Yankees struck out 139 times with nine guys with 10-plus strikeouts. The Dodgers have struck out 68 times.
Well, that just speaks to the sheer talent of that team. Like, they were, the number of guys that they had, you know, absolutely scorching hot coming into this series was really impressive. You know, even guys like Puig were not, you know, chasing pitches and striking out. Everybody was, you know, a completely reborn hitter. It's impressive.
But I mean, it wasn't totally different from what they were doing during the season. But my point is that, like, yes, the Yankees walked a lot and the Dodgers walked a lot, but the Dodgers strike out a lot less than the Yankees did. So I think that could definitely be a factor if you're going to try to see the Astros, the pitchers try to expand the zone too much. They could get in trouble there because the Dodgers were very patient with Robbie Ray in game two of the NLDS, made him throw five walks, got him out of the game. And I think Greinke threw five walks in game three. So, I mean, the Dodgers are very disciplined when they have to be. And if guys are going to lay stuff in the zone like Quintana did, they're going to jump all over him.
Yeah, and I expect almost the exact opposite from the Astros. They are going to continue to be a super aggressive team, and it works for them because they are just really talented, you know, bat-to-ball type of team. They don't strike out a lot, not because they don't, you know, swing a lot. They are just really, you know, on it all the time. They have a lot of guys that are good at making contact. So we'll see how that all plays out. You brought up bullpens. I think it's fair to, I think it's very important, actually, to mention the Dodgers bullpen in compared to the Astros bullpen. The Astros bullpen, like you mentioned, not incredibly sharp. Dodgers bullpen, the complete opposite. They were lights out throughout this entire postseason. Ray, what is making this Dodgers bullpen untouchable right now?
I mean, they just have really good pitchers, and I think guys are buying in. And what has really helped is that they haven't had to really rely on one guy. Yes, Jansen's pitched a lot. Yes, Morrow's got multiple innings, kind of a lot. But Maeda has been able to come in and shut guys down. In his role, he's been able to throw up to mid-90s, so he uses fastball effectively to set up his slider. Tony Watson has been kind of hit or miss. He's gotten hit a couple times, but he's been very good. Tony Zingrani has been very good. He's been used a lot, but like in very short stints. And I think for the Dodgers bullpen, it's just I can't really explain how good it is. Because we know Jansen has been good all year. Morrow was kind of under the radar, how good he was. He was kind of up and down. But, I mean, they just seem to click right now. And it's kind of like what we talk about a lot. Like, bullpens in this day and age will get you a long way. Mm-hmm. And the bullpen, I think, has some... They've broken the scoreless streak of innings pitched, some 20-something at this point. And it's just a scary good bullpen right now. These guys are just locked in and ready to go.
Yeah, and I don't think A.J. Hinch has that comfort level of, you know, pitchers you can bring out of the pen. I think the line stops at Ken Giles, really. After that, I don't think he feels good about guys like Will Harris and, you know, Joe Musgrove, Luke Gregerson. I think he's going to be very unique with the way he handles his starting pitching. He has a lot of starters to work with, too, to be fair. So I think there's a reason he hasn't just locked in everything after games one and two. I think, you know, the way in which he goes about using guys like Morton and McCullers and, you know, even Colin McHugh, Mike Fiers is still somewhere. I don't know exactly how the roster construction is going to shake out, but he might staff some games in different ways than you'd imagine. Brad Peacock is another very versatile type of pitcher. I think we should expect the unexpected from the Astros bullpen. The Dodgers might be a little more traditional, because they can be. They have a very, very solid, you know, roster from, you know, starting pitching to bullpen. So, I think that's enough with the pitching side of everything. Do you guys have any other thoughts on the matchups this series? Obviously, it is all gonna go pitch by pitch. Anything can happen, but you know which team looks like they're sitting pretty right now. It's really hard to identify which team looks like they have the upper hand right now.
I think the Dodgers have more momentum. I mean, the Astros really struggled on the road in that ALCS. They just did not look. They looked like a young team, which they are, and the experience, I think, really matters in the end. And, you know, I think the Dodgers just have to go in with more confidence, regardless of that streak to end the season. And I think Dave Roberts is a guru at this point, and definitely in the elite of managers. And I think it's the little factors like that that can end up making the difference between two teams. I think on paper strike up like pretty evenly. I think would you guys agree with that? I mean,
yeah, I think too. I'm kind of looking back to the NLCS. The starters kind of matched up very well. As a Dodger fan, you're like, hey, the Dodgers could get shut out in these games, and they struggled with hitting in some of the games. But once they got into the bullpen, the difference was clear. The Dodgers had a huge advantage. I don't think the Astros have as bad of a bullpen as the Cubs do, but the bullpen superiority is still very clear in this series. So I think that's where the Dodgers have the edge. And just this massive swagger they have right now, because I could tell, too, the Astros looked like they were pressing a little bit in New York. And I know it's a very tough place to play, but they looked a little bit shaky there. The Dodgers have just looked solid all around.
Yeah. Let's take a more thorough look back at, you know, the previous series that's going to set up this World Series. We'll start by talking about the ALCS, which we've referenced many times already. It was all about the home wins. Every single game was won by the home team in that series. So, you know, when you talk about the Astros struggling on the road, it's hard to say, does that just speak to how, you know, good the Yankees were when they needed to come up big? Obviously, the Yankees had one of the best comebacks that I've ever seen in that home series there. So, you know, I don't know if that's the road pressure that's forcing them to crack or what, but the fact of the matter is that the Astros do have to figure some things out on the road. And, you know, talking from a very retrospective point of view, I don't think A.J. Hinch would have done everything the same way to close out games than the way he did, because he went to some pitchers very tentatively, it seemed like. He didn't have the same kind of trigger finger that you'd expect from, you know, one of the more, you know, forward-thinking progressive teams. Rudy, what do you think about, you know, this, the factor of having the home field advantage in a series like this?
Yeah, I think in baseball it's very hard to quantify, especially. But I mean, there's no doubt that Dodger Stadium is one. I mean, Chavez Ravine is like one of, if not the best, home field advantages in baseball. And I think Minute Maid Park, just what I've seen, isn't. I mean, this seems good, but nothing special. And does that in the end really make or break the series? I don't really think so in baseball. But once again, I think we're kind of breaking down these more minor factors, and I think even down to the managerial level, someone like Hinch, it can maybe get to you that you're on this big stage with this crowd roaring, and I'm not going to say that it heavily sways or affects them, but I mean, these are like the small little variables that in the end can make the difference.
Yeah, and yeah, as a Yankees fan, that giant swing in the middle of the series felt amazing. It really... a lot of momentum, but then you kind of hit that wall when you realize you're going back to Houston and you're going to face Justin Verlander.
Yeah, it really felt like, to me at least, sorry to interrupt you, that for the Yankees specifically, that's obviously who I watched the most in the playoffs, and even like when watching the Cubs try to come back for the Dodgers, I mean, the teams are kind of being carried by their home field crowds and their passions. I really don't think the Yankees come back in either of those series if Yankee Stadium isn't, you know, full of that great atmosphere. And I think the players really do feed off that in the end. I think when you start to struggle and when things start to get tough and you're on that away field and the whole crowd is screaming at you and you can't hear yourself think, I mean, if you're a young player, like a, you know, Carlos Correa, for example, for as good as he is, that can affect you, I think. I don't think that's a factor that should just be ignored.
Right, and it's been impressive what these players have been able to do. You know, some of these. Let's talk about the, you know, the first two games of the series. Very close, one run games in both situations, where the starting pitchers were really, you know, carrying these games really deep. And the just having really clutch at bats late in the game is what it takes, and those are the at bats that you look at the most in a postseason game. You know, obviously every at bat matters the same, but you know, watching Carlos Correa hit a double to right center field off Aroldis Chapman in the ninth inning, for instance, is, you know, something that tells me a lot about the kind of hitter he is. It gets to a point where it's not just luck. It is just the grit to get the job done. And I think the Dodgers very obviously have that grit as well, which is why it's going to be very interesting going toe-to-toe there. So, you know, obviously with the Astros, the offense is, you know, very good. Is there any X factor that you're really scared of, Ray, to face in this series? Not necessarily a Correa or Altuve. You know, which bats really stand out to you from, like, a deeper level?
Are you saying, so, like, besides Correa and Altuve?
Yeah, like, who
am I
you?
Scared of?
Yeah.
I don't think anybody scares me. Well, I'm not terrified of anybody in the lineup. I'm wary of Altuve and Correa. Yeah, I mean, but I think Springer has looked not that good. Looks like he's pressing this postseason, but I mean, with this, I don't have anybody down there that's like, I don't know how we're gonna get him out, other than probably Altuve. But even then, he's shown his struggles at times this postseason. Mm-hmm. So I don't have any fears of anybody in that lineup.
I'm going to be a little bit more forthcoming with that information. I think the Dodgers really need to be wary of Evan Gattis, who definitely seems to, you know, be a streaky type of player, but a consistently aggressive, free-swinging guy who will hit anything, you know, that he's looking for, strike or not. He'll hit it a long way, and he's done it in this series. He's not fazed by the moment, and he's gonna be facing some left-handed pitchers that that he'll have an easy time handling their breaking pitches compared to from the other side of the plate. So that is one very important player for the Astros, I think, deeper in the lineup. And I think the real difference maker is going to be Alex Bregman, because he is going to hit second against these left-handed pitchers. And we saw what he was able to do against Chris Sale. I'm not going to say that Dodgers pitching is subject to the same fate as what Chris Sale did in that first series, but Alex Bregman is a weirdly overconfident type of player who is always ready to swing the bat, and he will not be fazed by the fact that he's facing Clayton Kershaw. He's going to hone in on a pitch, and if he gets it, then, you know, that's going to be a different game right there, because he is not going to be pressing. He is going to be one of those players that is just going to be aggressive. That's what it's going to look like this series, I think, from the Astros as a whole. They're just going to be a free-swinging type of lineup, and I'm looking forward to that.
I'm not saying like I don't think the Astros are gonna do anything, but like that's probably just a competitor in me coming out. Like, I'm not scared of anybody necessarily. I know guys can, you have to be wary of most of the hitters, especially Altuve, Correa, mm-hmm. and yeah, Bregman can be a very dynamic hitter this series. But I mean, there's nobody there's nobody where you're panicking about how do I get him out? Because Gattis, you just mentioned, he swings at everything. So, I mean, the Dodgers can certainly use that to their advantage, as well as it seems like they can adjust at the plate. They've adjusted on the mound very well, especially with guys in their bullpen.
Yeah. And I guess we'll talk about the NLCS now and kind of switch gears and kind of reach the other direction now. And we'll start by talking about the co-MVPs, because those are going to be very obviously the hitters to watch. Justin Turner, who really should have been the only MVP, let's be honest. What he did was unreal. And Chris Taylor was thrown in the mix. Fine, whatever. Co-MVPs are kind of dumb, in my opinion, anyway. But it does speak to what he was able to do in that series. So which, you know, I have such a difficult time phrasing this. Is there anything that is going to be able to stop, you know, Turner specifically, but just the hot hitters on the Dodgers? Like, what is it going to take to shut them down? Because the Cubs clearly came up with nothing, and that was partially just because they were really bad. But even a really good team is going to have to find a way to make these guys uncomfortable. They look super comfortable at the plate. Rudy, what kind of, you know, performance is it going to take to get these guys uncomfortable at the plate?
I mean, it's going to take a performance much better than the one against the Yankees. I think I keep on saying that, but I mean, I think it's undoubtable that as good as this Yankee team played in the playoffs, I mean, the Astros were the better team, and so were the Indians in theory, at least on paper. And you know, the Indians had probably the best pitching staff in baseball, and they really struggled in the playoffs. So it shows you that even talent doesn't make the difference in the end. I think when you have a team this hot as the Dodgers with this much confidence, you really have to play your A game. And when it comes to strategically playing for that, I mean, I think that means as a manager, you have to be aggressive and, you know, in replacing guys and making sure guys are ready and warmed up in the pen. But at the same time, one thing I really noticed was that the Astros were very keen to take out, like, for example, McCullers, I think it was game 4, I want to say, I could be wrong. He was at like 80-something pitches, pitching great, mowing down the Yankees, and they took him out. And I know he kind of had a rough end of the season and was injured for a lot of it. But if a guy's hot, you can't just, you know, say, oh, he's, you know, at some pitch count, or, oh, you know, he's, you know, he had a poor season, you know, I don't know if he's going to lose at any point. You got to ride those guys until, you know, the moment is right. And I think that's a tough game to play, and we'll really see if the Astros will pull that off. But I think it will really take nearly perfect bullpen and starting pitching matchup management all together for them to overcome an offense that just looks, in my opinion, too hot for an Astros team. I think, in the end, was carried by starting pitching, and I don't think, once again, like, that's the way to win the World Series these days. I just can't think of a way that, yet again, McCullers, Keuchel, and Verlander can carry the Astros through a seven-game series against a team this good as the Dodgers.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll tell you a very easy way to make sure that Turner's momentum doesn't hurt you, and that's not to throw to him. You know, Chris Taylor's a little different. Justin Turner is on a different. You might as well be Barry Bonds right now. Just, you know, that's
fair.
Treat him the same way. Don't let him be the one to beat you. The Cubs clearly had a problem with that. You know, there's some instances where they very clearly should have pitched around him. And I know it's because who hits after most of the time? It's Yasiel Puig, right?
It's going to be Bellinger.
Bellinger most of the time when it's, you know, normal right-handed pitcher.
Bellinger hits fourth anyways.
Yeah, okay, fine. Bellinger, that makes sense. Turner, Bellinger. Don't let Turner be the one to beat you. That is the only thing that I think the Astros really have to make sure they do is, you know, even just in the beginning of the series, I know Dallas Keuchel is a guy who throws a lot of strikes. He is not going to be okay with pitching, you know, intentionally walking certain hitters. You know, I'm sure most pitchers feel the same way. They don't, they feel that they have the edge over every single hitter they face. That's just their mojo. But seriously, don't pitch to him. That's the simplest way to go about it. That's all I have to say about, you know, Justin Turner anyway.
I think that's going to be hard, though, because you mentioned Bellinger is behind him. And, yeah, Bellinger has had some struggles, and he's been the most strikeout-prone Dodger this postseason. But it's hard to say, okay, put Turner on first, bring Bellinger up, Puig's going to be on deck. This lineup is deeper than I think most people give it credit for. Yes, they're shuffling towards the bottom. But, I mean, I agree. It's hard. Turner is a conundrum. Like, you don't want to let him beat you. But then again, there's a lot of other guys behind him that can beat you. And if you give him the man on base, it can be very dangerous. Especially if Taylor's been such a good table setter, I think he's made it very difficult for pitchers. And when Seager comes back, he's going to be a very good two hitter. I think it's going to be very, very difficult for pitchers to have that mindset of we don't want to pitch Justin Turner.
Yeah, and I get that this lineup is deep, but when somebody is, you know, hitting with an 11, like a 1.177 OPS in the postseason, there is something that you have to notice is that, okay, this guy clearly, you know, is a different animal right now. Just don't touch him. Like, don't make him angry. That's basically the way you have to treat it. So that's just how I view it anyway. You know, we mentioned the Cubs having zero success against the Dodgers, basically. They had one above-average outing from Arrieta that, you know, carried them an extra game. But, you know, this is a Corey Seager-less Dodgers team also that very easily manhandled the Cubs. So, you know, is there, you know, what parts of the Cubs game just, you know, really was the least impressive out of that entire performance in your opinion, Rudy? Like, which part of the Cubs game was just the weakest?
The poise. I know it's like a basic, it's like a cop out, but like, it's like really interesting that like a team like that can just get assaulted so easily, and kind of it never really felt like the Dodgers were not in control, and I mean just the whole team kind of failed to perform. I think in the end, like it kind of shows that the superstar manager is an incredibly overrated concept in my opinion. That's what I really noticed. I'm, you know, people really like to circle jerk around John Madden's, not John Madden,
Did it again.
Yeah, I always do that. Madden's ability to, you know, guide that team. But, I mean, like, the talent didn't perform. It doesn't really matter as much as he wants to argue with the, you know, umpires about an unnearly horrendous call. If, you know, the pitching doesn't perform and, you know, MVP quality hitters aren't up to speed, it doesn't really matter. I think it's really interesting to me, you know, considering how much, you know, Theo Epstein and Madden have, and just that whole kind of team's development area has been praised recently. You know, this is a pretty disappointing year, you know, they made the NLCS. I mean, they kind of got lucky in the end to make the playoffs. They're in a very, pretty weak division. And no one on this team, like, had a better season, really. Essentially everyone took a step back that's a major contributor. And they made a lot of risky decisions recently in terms of trading prospects and going all in. And, you know, for example, I think one thing that's really underrated, I know I'm getting a bit sidetracked, but, like, a Starlin Castro move, getting rid of a guy like that to make room, you know, and then plus all the prospects they traded this season, that starts to add up. And with Arrieta as a free agent, I mean, they have a lot of questions going forward. And I think people kind of too quickly assume that this was automatically going to be a dynasty, when in baseball, nothing is ever guaranteed. Things can change so fast, so quick, just right away.
Yeah, they are a young team, but they're also a team that needs to kind of restock a little bit. You really take a deeper look at what they have and figure that out. I mean, the Yankees look very good for the future. They have a lot of the same components, and these players that are, you know, returning have made progress. This is the right type of young player development. The Cubs have been a little bit different in that regard. You know, with guys especially like Addison Russell, Wilson Contreras, Javier Baez, their path hasn't necessarily been smooth. Last year, they were huge for, you know, that World Series win. But in terms of just long-term player development, they're not where the Cubs franchise projected them to be. And, you know, you mentioned that when MVPs don't show up, that's a big problem. Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant were, you know, ice cold that entire time. So that is something to worry about as well. It's, you know, I don't really have anything more to say. I was thinking about something else to say about the Cubs for 2018 going forward, but, you know, that's just the reality. They have to reevaluate. They thought they were in a really good spot last year, kind of like the Yankees feel good this year. They're young and they were already poised for great things, but the Cubs have to take a more serious look. They can't afford to have another all in type of season at the deadline like they did this year. It didn't work. So, you know, we'll see what they do in the off season. We'll talk plenty about the off season once this series is over, for sure. So, yeah, do you guys have anything else on this series? I could ask you for predictions, but I think it'd be pointless. I think most of us here are rooting for the Dodgers, to be fair.
Everyone on the podcast should be rooting for the Dodgers.
It is a difficult thing.
I can't imagine Barbeau is rooting for the Astros. That'd be very strange.
Division rival, yeah. It's such a hard thing for
everybody except me. Like, the Dodgers are less of a rival because they're National League than, like, what the Astros are. Because the Astros beat the Yankees, and the Astros are division rivals for the Angels. Like, the Dodgers are the lesser of two evils to everybody else on this podcast.
I don't know how seriously Farbo takes the freeway series, but I know very few people who really do to this degree over a division rival. I mean, Yuri, let me ask you this. Would you root for the Mets or, like, the Orioles in the playoffs, in the World Series? Who would you be rooting for? I mean, I'd probably be rooting for the Mets if I had to choose. I mean, I wouldn't really want either to win, but...
You know, normally I look at... I don't care about the past, normally. I look at the players on the field and who I like. I like a lot of the Astros players. That's why I'm so conflicted. Jose Altuve is, like, my favorite baseball player, but he also recently just murdered my team. So I need a little more time to forget about that before I'm ready to be okay with him winning a World Series. So I don't know. I'm gonna watch it and enjoy it nonetheless. I mean, this is the best baseball of the year. So yeah, it's gonna be hard to live up to the series that they had last year. So we shall see. We shall see. It all starts tomorrow night for us. It'll be, I guess, Tuesday night, the night that you'll be hearing this, most likely. So, yeah, this is probably the last time we'll talk before this. This season is officially over. You guys feel... I feel sad about that. This is something that I wasn't quite ready for, you know? I mean, I love the off season too, but... You know, no more baseball every single day. I'm going to be checking my phone constantly with nothing to see, except for, you know, lousy, you know, NBA and NFL crap. But nobody cares about that, really, right? How are you guys? You guys going to be okay going into this off season, coping without baseball for another few months?
I mean, this was probably the best baseball season in recent memory, personally. So I'm going to be pretty disappointed for it to end. And the Yankees run, I mean, obviously was something that I thoroughly enjoyed, and they're going to be by far my most successful team that I refer to this season, so I'm going to be pretty disappointed, there's no doubt.
Yeah, I guess it's a little different for us. We feel like the season's already over, but, you know.
Well, I mean, Ray has a lot to look forward to.
This is all of his season right here, basically.
Yep.
It's down to the wire.
I'm still giddy right now. I'm ready to go.
I really do want to just see your reactions as you watch some of these games.
Like, you told me I could watch it with you, so if you want to film it, go ahead.
I don't know if I don't know. That'd be a little bit strange, I think. Because then you'd have, you know, more incentive. I just want it unfiltered. You know, just a pure crazed Dodgers fan who is.
Oh, it's gonna be unfiltered either way.
Who has not been here in forever.
I've never been here.
Never. You have never in your lifetime. That's right. Yeah, just take me back to 2009 and I'll be fine. But, you know, this is new for you. So, yeah, that's going to do it for our podcast today. And I guess our last podcast of the season. You know, next time we talk, it'll be completely different. We're changing gears. We're already going to be looking ahead to next year. So, you know, thanks again, everybody, for a fantastic season. I hope you know, enjoyed the content that we were able to bring you guys. And of course, we'd love to hear your feedback about anything. You know, if you have, you know, questions about what this offseason holds, if you just want to, you know, let us know about anything that happened this past season, you can do so by, you know, tweeting us at WPB_podcast. We also tweet a lot during these playoff series, if you're looking for that kind of thing as well, go to our Facebook page, talk to us there, and you can also email us, warandpeacebaseball@gmail.com. I also recommend that you check out our website. In the off season, we will have articles in addition to the podcast that we do. So all of that you can find at our website. Link will be down below in the description. All right. Thank you guys again for joining me anyway. Enjoy this World Series. Man, oh man. You guys ready? I'm ready. Let's do this.
I am so ready.
You are so ready. All right. Let's go ahead and head on out of here. So, you know, as always, Ray.
Peace. The book.